Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Highs of 78 today, a lot of clouds. It's been the kind of days where the smell of fried foods hangs heavy in the air. Have y'all noticed that or not? It's like where you can smell if Popeyes is cooking chicken around a block or whatever. It just hangs. I don't know why. Right now it's 65 throughout the weekend. Highs of 77 tomorrow, 77 Saturday, and Sunday 78. So I don't know if it's going to clear up any or not, but there's your deal. In the treasure chest, the virtual treasure chest casino power seat now, live from the host committee's media center on Radio Row in a convention center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. That's where David Beer finds himself, director of immigration studies at the Cato Institute, to talk about the Trump administration and what's going on with immigration. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about the Trump administration, what they're trying to do, and where the court action stands on this.
Well, they're trying to do a lot of different things on immigration, as you know. So you have the birthright citizenship order, which is probably the biggest, hottest item on there. That's been enjoined by multiple courts at this point. That item obviously restricts birthright citizenship to the children of people who are not U.S. citizens or permanent residents of the United States. So that includes people who are here legally under temporary visas, as well as people who are here illegally. And then you look at, you know, some of the other items that they're working on, the invasion declaration at the border. They're removing people who cross illegally without, basically as soon as they catch them, they're putting them on planes. So that's their item at the border. And then when you look at what's happening in the interior of the United States, you have an increase in the number of arrests of people, and that's what they're kind of advertising and putting out there on social media, all the people who are being arrested. But at this point, although there's been twice as many arrests, there have been fewer removals of those people so far. So they're removing people at the border, but they haven't really got to remove very many people from the interior of the United States.
See, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about the perception as opposed to the reality of what's being billed or how's it being branded and what's actually happening, because we heard about mass deportation. People that were in favor of that were happy about it. People that were opposed to it were terrified about it. But where's the truth of it in terms of what's actually happening or what's actually likely to happen?
Yeah, so they're arresting about 600 people a day. So if you do the math on that, we'll be have mass deported, or at least mass arrested, 11 million people in a few decades. So at the current pace, we're not nearly close to, you know, a level of where we would even be arresting enough people to mass deport everyone here illegally. And then if you look at the removals, you know, they're not getting these people onto planes and flying them out of the country. At this point, it's a process. They're not. No. Most of the people who they have arrested in the interior have not been removed. And, they're either in detention, but many of them have been released into the United States again to await, their process for removal.
Wait a minute. Let me take a break, and we'll pick it up when we come back, and maybe I'll approach it a different way, David, which is, and I think I already know the answer, but I'm going to approach it this way, which is, okay, so what's changed, really, despite all the promises, and what's likely to change in the future despite all the promises? We're talking to David Beer, our friend. He's the director of immigration studies at the Cato Institute. We're broadcasting live from the host committee's media center on Radio Row in the convention center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL. Back in a flash. Time for traffic now. All right, here we go. Tommy Tucker, WWL 624, talking to David Beer, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. We're at the Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row in a convention center powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. For the big game, David Beer, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute, is in the virtual Treasure Chest Casino power seat. Let's talk about these texts that I'm getting. I'm going to read them to you, all right, David? This guy's spreading misinformation. They're definitely being flown out. I've seen it with my own eyes. I don't know where this person's seen it or whatever. Somebody else said that all of people loaded up on a military plane in Dallas last week was a fake video. I don't know what they saw. Who cares if it's 600 a day or six a day? You have to start somewhere, right? Somebody else says, sir, you're saying the border is exactly the same way as it was under President Obama Harris. I'm just trying to find the truth of what's going on, what was promised, what's being delivered, and what's likely to happen. Because people today they want to look at it as winning or losing. It's a zero-sum game. There's no nuance. There's no gray. It's all black or white. Either we're doing it or we're not doing it. We're winning or we're losing. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are people being removed from the United States, including on some of these military flights that, you know, they've been promoting. The military flights, actually, look at the carrying capacity of those flights. They're actually lower than some of the other flights that don't get as much news coverage. So, you know, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they've got 13 planes. You know, the DOD has loaned four planes to them. You know, that's their limit. I mean, that's so, you know, you got to hire more people, you know, get more planes. There's always going to be a limit, and we've obviously hit the limit for planes. And if you look at the detention capacity, you got to hold somebody while they're waiting for removal. The detention capacity of the United States for holding people who are here illegally is 41,500. So you have to change the law. You have to appropriate the money if this is what you want to do.
So when you say capacity, that is not by statute, that's by logistics and what they have the facilities for?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So they're looking to change that. They talked about Guantanamo. But look, I mean, flying someone to Guantanamo isn't a lot cheaper than flying someone to their home country. So it's, there are opportunity costs no matter how you try to slice this. That, you know, you have to deal with the logistics and the reality. You can't just deal in, well, you know, I signed a piece of paper and says that everyone should be removed. That's really not how it works.
Is anything in the works to devote more assets, spend more money, provide more of this, more of that? Are they working on any of that as far as you know?
Oh, yes. Congress is considering spending a lot more money on this issue. We don't know how much or what it will look like, but that is definitely something that members of Congress are considering and working on. A request has obviously been made by the president for this issue.
So when somebody shows up at the border claiming asylum, that they want asylum because they're being persecuted politically, has anything changed with that as far as the way they're handled?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, you know, by the end of the Biden administration, asylum was effectively banned already. And there isn't, like, a dramatic difference between, yes, the numbers are down, but, look, they were down in 2017 as well when President Trump came into office. So perception is probably even more important than policy when it comes to people showing up in the future, people coming now. They think, okay, let's see what happens with this guy. You know, is he actually going to follow through on his promises this time? But that time, they hung back, they waited. But then we saw them come again in 2018 and 2019. And then it went down again. It came back up again by the end of his term in office. They were arresting about 70,000 per month. Right now, this last month was 30,000 in January. Obviously, that's two-thirds Biden, but that gives you kind of the scale of what we're talking about.
And the other question I have is, for those that are caught crossing rather illegally, what's changed, or has anything changed?
For those who are caught crossing illegally?
Yes.
Yeah, so again, these are people those are the people who are ending up on some of these military flights. Many of them are just being returned right to Mexico. Right now, the numbers are very low. I mean, you're talking, a few hundred a day compared to several thousand per day at the height of the border crisis 2022 and 2023. So it's much more manageable for the Border Patrol than it was in the past. But you have, no one's really sure, but 13, 15 million in the United States, and that's really going to be, the challenge that they're focused on for the next 4 years.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. David Beard, Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. We come back, we'll talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, as we always do on Thursday mornings. Bird flu kind of making itself known around the nation. We're at the Host Committee's Media Center on Media Row in the Convention Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. I'm Tommy Tucker, back in a flash. Time now, 6:30, WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7. We are live here at the Convention Center, Radio Row. I know the NFL traffic is going to build up later on. We'll grab some people as they walk by. And go to NFL One Pass. Go get the NFL One Pass app, and they'll get alerts on everything that's going on throughout the day. I signed up for that. That's the official site of the National Football League, and it'll keep you in tune with everything that's happening. Mike Strain joins us now, Louisiana Commissioner of Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike Strain?
Man, I am doing well. I bet you're telling everybody to go down and get some good seafood, to go down to one of the Brennan's restaurants. Or there's so many to choose from, or Drago's. I mean, you're very close to Drago's, Tommy, right there.
Yeah.
In the hotel. And just, look, now is the time, right? All these people coming in, they want genuine Louisiana seafood, some of those big oyster and shrimp po'boys. And, and maybe a little crawfish etouffee, a little fried catfish. They want that total experience. And I know you are busy. So, man, thank goodness. I sure hate to know I have to drive to come see you today. But I think it's going to be great. It's going to be a great weekend. And I saw in one article that they estimated that 500,000 pounds of just soft-shell crabs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just incredible. Oh, what? Soft-shell crab po'boy? The problem is once these people from all over the United States come here and eat, they're going to come back on a regular basis.
That's good.
Yes.
That's what we want.
Absolutely. That's what we say. We will eat all weekend, and then we'll sell some of the rest.
There you go. Well, it happens with crabs in Maryland. You know that. Maybe sometimes we sell what we could eat.
That's our crabs in Maryland.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
We fish them here and send them up there.
And big old number ones.
Maryland crabs.
What those big giant ones? Number ones, they call them? Hard to get the number
ones. That's right. They are beautiful.
Let's talk about bird flu before we go any further, because now we're hearing about bird flu in Nevada and making a reference to Louisiana. What's going on with bird flu, and what could this mean in terms of poultry and egg prices, and then how do you prevent it from spreading, all that? Mike, we've been talking about this for a long time.
Yes, the situation is that there are now, as of today, 4 new herds in Nevada that have the same strain. They're called clades. Same strain of virus that was found in Louisiana, in which the gentleman, passed away. And it's a new strain. This is the first time, though, it's ever been seen in cattle. And it's D1.1. And the issue is these cattle are now getting sick with respiratory signs. So this virus tends to want to mutate in different areas to this particular strain. That's one of the things with the flu virus. It will mutate, or we call it reassort. And we're very concerned now because this particular strain is more conducive to causing the cattle to get really sick with respiratory signs, but also to infect people. So So good biosecurity is the key. And we're also hoping that we push through and get a vaccine where we can vaccinate our livestock, our poultry, you know, our cattle, and the farm workers that are exposed. And so, again, we're going to keep a close eye on this one, because with the bird flu that just started, you know, the original bird flu started in three herds in the Texas Panhandle. And it was a different strain, but now it's in you know, almost 1,000 herds, you know, in 20 states. And so it's something we have to be, we got to take this serious. You know, we just can't turn a blind eye, and we need all the science, but we're going to have to make some hard decisions, you know, if we need to, you know, so we've got to stop transmission. And look, I'm in favor of vaccinating the wild birds, you know, and that's been discussed, you know, that when those birds, ducks go into Canada to use, you know, fogging machines or whatever to try to vaccinate them. So, you know, we are concerned. We don't have that in Louisiana. But the issue is, this is not a strain of the virus that we are comfortable with being in the environment.
So when you say push through, are you talking about push through regulations, push through scientific research? Because we've heard so much about...
All of the above.
Okay, so we've heard so much about vaccines with RFK Jr. and his hearings and everything else. Does he have anything to do, or does that have anything to do with this, or is it a completely different department?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He can either lean forward so we can rapidly develop and deploy vaccines in livestock. You know, if you eat beef, those cattle are vaccinated. Before they go into feedlots, they are certified that they've been vaccinated and protected. Your pork has been vaccinated and protected. Your dog, your cat, your horse is vaccinated and protected. But we don't vaccinate our poultry. We have avian influenza vaccines, not these necessarily strains, but we have general vaccine that may give some protection, but we won't vaccinate our birds. You've seen the price of eggs. We've lost between 8 and 10% of our total egg-laying population in the last 3 to 4 months. I mean, eggs, you know, in a lot of places, eggs are almost $1 a piece, simply because we've lost the hens, and we won't do it because we're worried about that our foreign trade partners will not buy our poultry if we vaccinate. They buy our steaks, they buy our ground meat, they buy our pork. You know what? I think it's time that we vaccinate our chickens. We need to stop this disease.
So is this... I don't want to get you in a political conversation here because that's not my intent, okay. But is it about policy here with RFK Jr.? Does he handle any of this, or are you concerned about that at all, or not? I'm just worried about, as a consumer, what we should be concerned with.
Well, it will be in his, you know, in his cup of tea. So before it has not been. It's been about international politics, why we haven't vaccinated our poultry. But now, on the front line, do we develop a mRNA vaccine, which we can develop quickly, you know, and other vaccines to vaccinate our poultry? And now looking at vaccinating our beef, you know, our cattle and our dairy cattle, or does he say, no, we're not going to do that? So we need them to lean forward with sound science. But yes, when you're talking about his influence over the Food and Drug Administration and, you know, the USDA and all the other things, that can have a major impact. And, you know, we're going to lean forward. We're going to, you know, say, look, we need to vaccinate because, one, you know, we don't, you know, if eggs double again, we're all in trouble. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is there's a lot of virus out there. And now you have seen that different strains are, you know, are from spontaneous either mutation or when the genetics reassort within a person or an animal, it comes out differently. Mm-hmm. So we need to get ahead of this.
Let me take a break, Mike.
And we need to vaccinate. We need to stop.
We come back because in addition to egg prices, then you got, you know, I saw the movie Rams, I mean, I told you about where they have guys in Australia and the sheep get infected and they got to destroy the entire herd. If you talk about,
correct,
and you can come back and talk about how many hens have already been, had to be destroyed in the country and what effect that could have, because you don't just recover from that immediately. We're talking to Mike Strain about bird flu in Nevada. We'll also talk about crawfish and tariffs and seafood testing and more when we come back. Mike Strain, our good friend, the Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. We're at the Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row in the Convention Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith & Soso. Time now, WWL Traffic. 57, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly back to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. We're live at the Convention Center. And we're talking about, Mike, we were talking about bird flu and destroying livestock, but I want to move along quickly if we can. I was talking to A.C. Cooper about shrimp testing and enforcement of regulations and just the outrageous amount of seafood that's being sold is from the Gulf, and it's not in restaurants. Thoughts?
That's right. I was listening to you, and I know AC, and he's one, probably the biggest advocate for Louisiana shrimp that I know of. And so last legislative session, a number of bills were filed that have now become law, and we are really, really looking to figure out how we can, you know, curb the illegal imports. In other words, those that are contaminated with antibiotics and other things, also illegal labeling. So it's in, there are a number of different laws and a number of different agencies working simultaneously. And so for the labeling laws, any imported shrimp or crawfish where the package is deceiving, in other words, it says Boudreaux's crawfish, and you got, you know, a shrimp boat on there, and believe it or not, they put a shrimp boat on a crawfish packet, and then you have a scene of rural Cajun life, and when you flip over and you look on the back, it's imported. Well, under that, that my inspectors are looking at these packages, then I have to make the final decision. Then in that particular case, they got to put in 30-point font, which is big font, you know, or label on the front of the package. Failure to do so, first offense is $15,000, second is $25,000, third and thereafter are $50,000 per offense. And so this legislation was passed last year, went into law. In July, we sent the 60 major importers, every importer we could find, we sent them a letter, said this is the law, and this is what we're going to do. So that's one. Secondly, we are now testing for antibiotics at the state lab. The analytical lab tests are underway. We expect the first results in about a week, and this is an accredited regulatory lab. And so we started that. That all went into effect on about the 20th of January. And so we're testing, and these the results will be then sent over to Lieutenant Governor's Office, Seafood Safety Task Force, Wildlife and Fisheries, and Department of Health and Hospitals.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure as always. Mike Strain, Director of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. Wait, what I got? I'm confused here. Department of Agriculture and Forestry. I'm sorry, Mike.
And aquaculture.
I'm sorry, Mike. You got so much under your purview. We'll be back, WWL.